Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Welcome to After Things. I'm Andrew Main, joined by Brian Brushwood.
Yes, and of course, Justin Robert Young is right here. Oh, no, he had to run.
I'm not keeping score, but I think you're in the lead with the Justin and Brian After Things.
We should start After Things with an attendance roll call. Brushwood, yes. Brian, here.
Brian.
What's on your mind, man?
See the smile on my face?
Is that because you're printing money with your crazy evil scientist lab of robots making other robots?
Actually, I stopped the printers for like a week and a half because I had to finish up a writing project and I didn't want to be constantly like tweaking and doing that.
Oh, dude, that's got to be like a seductive black hole of your attention.
Oh, my God.
Because it feels like work. Like for me, it's for me, my version of that is managing the comments on YouTube and responding to tweets, because each one is very little amount of time, and you get that little, you know, oh, look at me, I'm managing my social brand. I'm working. And meanwhile, you know, it's great because it feels like you're getting stuff done, and meanwhile, the important projects are just sitting there mounting up.
And then meanwhile, like, I got a email from Mark Fraunfelder of Boing Boing, who is like one of the biggest guys in like the maker movement and all that, asking me to be on a show tomorrow, which is kind of like finding out like if you're into making and building things, like you've been asked to go like on the Tonight Show.
Oh, sure. Absolutely. That's the sweet center of the universe in that. And how did that come up, come on your plate? Because people, I'm sure there's a lot of people out there who have projects and they'd like to make it onto various podcasts.
I think that what happened here with Fraunfelder was that, and I'm pronouncing his name wrong, I'm sure. But I read it all the time. I know we have a friend or two in common, and I think it may have just been that my name came up a couple times.
But it happened totally organically, huh?
I just out of nowhere, I just go, hey, an email. I'm like, oh, wow.
That's amazing. But
that's how I'm smiling. Well, I mean, I'm smiling because of that. I'm smiling. You know why I'm smiling, Brian?
Why?
Because once we finish this podcast, I'm going to get in my car. I'm going to go to my favorite foot massage place, get my foot massage, mm-hmm. maybe a little shoulder massage, mm-hmm. all on the up and up, guys. Okay, so you know. I'm going to get myself a barbecue sandwich. They get this really good barbecue sandwich at Spring Street Smokehouse. Okay. They got this like melted Gruyere cheese that goes over. They drizzle it on there. It is amazing. Like, Andrew, that's conspicuous consumption. Why are you so happy about that?
Maybe you're happy because it's such conspicuous consumption.
Or maybe it's a little victory lap.
Uh-oh. What happened? What victory are you celebrating?
Maybe I finished a book.
What?
I don't mean listening to a book or reading a book.
Yeah, you're like, why didn't you make that your pick?
I finished the first draft, mind you, of a children's book, a middle grade story I've been working on.
Oh, right, like a young adult thing.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, more middle grade than young adult. And like, I will go into the differences at some point if anybody wants to hear that. But it's been a passion project. I had to take a sideline to go finish Name of the Devil, by the way. You can pre-order right now on Amazon.
What's the release date on that?
Name of the Devil is July. And I'm going to tell you a little, I think I may have mentioned this before, we're going to have like a little Name of the Devil. There's going to be an Angel Killer short story coming out featuring Jessica Blackwood before then.
Oh, that's so great.
There's the cover. Oh, wow. They did. my publisher said that we were going to do a cover reveal. I guess they did.
I stole it. I scooped them.
That's hilarious. I got to ask about that. Like, remember we talked about doing a whole social media cover reveal?
That's hilarious.
That is hilarious.
The paperback has not that.
Yeah, that is hysterical. So anyhow, you can pre-order that. And actually, it's actually been doing the pre-orders on that. It's actually really, I mean, it's not like a great number, but it's actually, I'm surprised that
we talked to Scott Sigler about this for like what it takes to get on New York bestseller list and all that stuff. And apparently pre-orders, it's like a rubber band snapping on the day of release, right? So it's like pre-orders It doesn't matter if you pre-order a month in advance, a week in advance, the day in advance. The day it's released is when all the pre-orders are executed, and it shows up on that day and hopefully rockets up to number one, right?
That's what I'm told by my publisher. So if you want to just make sure that you can count it on that first day or whatever, pre-order it now.
I just clicked, and if you're logged in, you can pre-order with one click. I just did the one click pre-order. That was very
easy.
Thank
you, Brian.
Dude, that's great.
Appreciate it, everybody. So yeah, that's as far as I know. But anyhow, I just finished this kid's book. It's a full-length novel. I'm excited about it. It's got a character that I really, 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 really love and hold dear to my heart that I can't wait to share with other people. But it was one of these things where it just – everything got in the way of trying to finish this book. Like I got, 10,000, 15,000 words into it. Then all of a sudden, Name of the Devil, manuscript – for that fell onto my lap, and I'm like, okay, I need to work on that. I spent several months going over that. My fantastic editor, Hannah Wood, gave me tons and tons of notes and a lot of things to work on it to try and make it better. And we already got our first advance review on it, which was ecstatic. So that was good.
That's great.
So then I had to go do that. And then that was a long process to do that. And then after I did that, then I had to do a second round. I got a little writing. I'm like, oh no, we need to do this final, this other check of it. Right. I'm like, okay, I did a little more writing. And then I start, then all of a sudden I get, this is like the galley version of Name of the Devil that I had to go through there. And
do you hit a point where it's just hard to want to read your words again?
Oh yeah. I mean, I joked that I can write a book in a week, but like to edit it, it takes 3 months, which maybe tells you that I should, spend more time writing them.
Yeah.
It's funny. I got this galley thing. And the first thing I did is I said, well, I have my green M&M test for the book. The green M&M test was, I think,
Van Halen's. Van Halen's contract writer said no brown M&Ms, and so people would have to pick through it because they knew that there was no way to buy them pre-done that way. So they would show up and they would look at the, and I believe it was David Lee Roth's idea because they knew that if there were no brown M&Ms in the jar, then everything else was likely to be not a total.
Yeah, there's a way to tell. Like, did they read the fine print? So mine, I swear to you, my fine print is, did they get the Diamond Club logo right when I do my special thing?
Oh, that's awesome.
First time they did that, I looked, they left out the symbol.
Oh, that's awesome.
And so now the first thing is like, well, let me see if they got that. Nope, they got it right. So they got that absolutely right. And also like having, we had, when I did my New York talk, we had some Diamond Club members come out and meet. And so did the HarperCollins publicity people, who I love. Got to meet in the flesh actual Diamond Club people. So that was great.
Oh, that's great. So they understand, like, there's a difference between being told, like, no, there's a passionate fan base, this community, they can move mountains. Mm-hmm. You're like, yeah. But it's like when you see them show up, boots on the ground is what matters.
Yeah, absolutely. So I finished this first draft, and I emphasize first draft of this story. It's about a goblin, I'll tell you that.
Oh, right on. Oh, we have talked about this in the past.
Yeah. Tonally, it's between Lemony Snicket and Harry Potter. It's not a magical world, in an Andrew world. I have written some other young adult or kid stuff that's got kind of more magic based. But anyhow, I'll explain it later on. But finally, I finished it. And part of the way I had to motivate, like I had like last week, I'm like, I looked at time frames. I had reasons to try to finish this thing. And then I had a friend come into town, and I'm like, and I had to hang out. I wanted to hang out with the person. I don't get to hang out a lot with them. And so I hung out with my buddy, and then it was one of those things where that weekend that I was supposed to do this and finish up, I didn't get to do it. And, life gets in the way. And I'm like, I don't have a wife. I don't have kids yet that I know of in this country that I'm legally paying support for. And so I can only imagine how much harder it is for other people to find the time, but I found the time. I finally said, Friday, I said, okay. I had to take care of something in the middle of the week, a really cool project, which maybe I'll have more to talk about. But anyhow, I said Friday, like, okay, this is what I'm going to do. I'm not going to give myself this really super big, ambitious, like, you're going to write. When you've done like 17,000, 20,000 words a day, it can set a very unrealistic expectation for yourself, in some situations. So I just said, okay, I know like I can do it, doing a chapter, sitting. I'm like, okay, do two chapters Friday, do 3 chapters Saturday and then do 2 chapters Sunday, and I'll reach the end and then I'll be ready to go back and revisit with the
– And that's the toughest thing, man, is and we've talked about this before. Like for me, the best advice I ever got for writing a book is turn off the monitor, because you stop editing as you write, and instead you just write knowing that you'll go back and fix things later. Mm-hmm. It's important to finish so then you can start revising.
Yeah, and I'll touch on that. I have a thought on that too. So I said, that's what I'll do. And so I did my two chapters Friday, and I actually way exceeded the words that I needed to do. And then Saturday, I did 2 chapters, and then I took a little lunch break. And then I'm like, you know what? I'm kind of excited about writing the rest of this. Wrote it, and I said, okay, I've got these other parts I can save till tomorrow. I'm like, you know what? I'm going to do them Saturday. So I finished it Saturday. Finished that version of it. And again, like, I know where I need to go back in there and do stuff and say, like, oh, this, but I finished the story's there. The story's on paper. I have my first draft of it. I'm excited about it. I may be the only person in the world that loves the story, but that's fine. And now I'm like, okay, now I get to take a break, you know, and I'm ready to jump right into it. But I'm at that point where I have it and I love it. And so I felt very good. But it came down to, for me, was just figuring out, disciplining myself and saying, okay, just do this much this day. You know, writing a book is not hard. Writing a book is not hard for anybody. Sometimes you have to do a different pace than other people. You have 365 days in a year. To write a novel, we'll call it 60,000 words. You know, if you write 1,000 words a day, which is an hour, that's 60 days. That's 2 weeks, 2 months rather. 2 months you can be done. If you can find a Saturday or Sunday there to spend 4 or 5 hours, it happens a lot faster. It's just the hardest part isn't finding the time. It's putting yourself back in the seat.
And Yeah. Beginning is the most difficult thing. There's Anthony Robbins' story where he's talking about trying to motivate an older woman to lose weight and start exercising. Like, she really wants to do it, really wants to do it. He's like, okay, just walk, you know, just walk for 10 minutes a day or whatever. And then she wouldn't do it for weeks and weeks and weeks. And then finally, he says, okay, you know what? Let's just drop the bar. All I want you to do is just put on your jogging clothes. That's all. You don't have to run. Just put on your jogging clothes and then wear them for 5 minutes and then take them off. Let's start with that. And then the next time, you know, next week he sees her and he's like, so did you put on your jogging clothes? And she's, you know, cuts him off as like, I went 12 miles a day or however long. Like, because once she had committed, once she had put on the tracksuit, it felt ridiculous to not do anything. Like, she had begun. She was already on the other side.
Absolutely. And it's funny because that's an example I used for myself with working out. Was like, I had these shorts that I'd go wear when I go walk. I just put on the shorts. And like that, all right. And as we've read more and more about why we're motivated, you understand so much, like, when you have to make 8 decisions about something, mm-hmm. you just lose your resistance and you want to avoid it entirely. And when we think about a task and we think the enormity of the task, we give up. You know, if I said, you know, said, Brian, go save the world tomorrow.
Where do I begin?
Right. Yeah. You know, I'm like, Brian, just be nice to people, you know, say hello to one person tomorrow, you know. Oh, well, that I can do. For me, it is, I need 3 things. Aside from my master plan of where the book is going to go, I need to tell myself to sit down, open up Scrivener to a blank page, and then with that chapter, have a clear idea of the conflict and have some sort of starting hook. Where does it start? Where is the center to begin this thing from? If I have those things, it's super easy. Everything flows. I stop writing. I reach hesitations when either I'm a little bit, the map is too fuzzy and I don't know how to get to where I need to go. The solution for that is just jump ahead. That's always the solution. I've had that happen several times. I just jumped ahead and I went back.
Just draw a box and write, something happens here and now we're there.
And often you find out, you don't need it. Often you find out that, you know, maybe you need a little bit of just clarification, but often the story can be even tighter because you didn't waste that time connecting things, which often in movies, it gets tedious because, like, yeah, we know this part here. You know, we know what's going to happen here. So one is, I just say, okay, you know, if I have my plan, I have that, sit down, open up Scrivener, which I write in, open up that page, start with that. And if I'm stuck trying to figure out the right way into it, I get up, I go for a walk, and I just tell myself, all I have to do on this walk is just figure out, you know, what's the center point of that scene and the conflict and where it ends. And then, boom. So, feeling very happy right now. Of course, I will go through the normal.
Speaking of which, I'm sure you want to edit it, but if you're looking for someone who might want to test read, I don't know, maybe a 11-year-old girl who reads everything voraciously. Maybe she's on her sixth lap of The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy because that's her new assignment at her school.
I don't know if I can handle that well of an informed critic, Brian.
I'm telling you, she will chew it up in 2 days. And in fact, I what I should do is not even tell her that it's yours.
Yeah. We'll see. Yes, I'm nervous about that. Terribly nervous.
She's the demo, and she is. I mean, she'll. I don't know. Would probably.
I'd love to know, what is she like? What books has she liked?
Oh man, she'll give you that list. So many, but I mean, you know, she read, you know, the Giver and the. I don't know, just all.
Because here's the thing, like in my research and reading a lot of middle grade, a lot of books, I have found that like some of the most popular ones are not well written. Like you compare, and I don't want any names, but there are like series that like are extremely well sold well, but you pick them up and you go, man, this is like. I think Harry Potter is very well done. I think J.K. Rowling really grew with her writing. And I've read other stuff and I go, wow, this is the plotting is just all over the place. This is really written for a 12-year-old boy just to throw this thing here, and it doesn't hold up. And there's a reason why kids talk about this book and not adults and stuff. And so it's all over the place. And that's the thing that has me like, man, it's curious. It's a interesting. Now I'm going to talk about, you mentioned before the idea of, you know, preparing yourself for going back to it and redoing it. And that is absolutely important. It, you know, writing is not a get-rich-quick scheme. Writing is not a, let me just do this, then walk away from it. And that is where bad writing comes from. And I would have people often go to me like, oh, take a look at this. And I'm like, no human should be looking at this yet. Nobody. You know, like, why are you like, there may be something good here, but there's so much awful that, you know, you can't see it and you have to prepare. And sometimes people just give up on it and they're like, oh, you find the value because I've given up on it. Well, that nobody will. Marvel has a great track record with movies. You know, you look at the Marvel track record, the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Now, absolutely. How do they get good? And you look back at some of the bad Marvel movies and you had some of the same people involved, but they learned. Every Marvel movie, they budget for reshoots. They go into it knowing they're going to come back for a couple weeks and shoot additional scenes. And often, you know, other film companies, other studios, most of them, no, they never do that. They'll be like, okay, we're going to spend $80 million on this. Like, what if we need to fix it? Well, no, we have $80 million. Got to get it right the first time. Doesn't happen. Doesn't work that right. You pray for a miracle. Marvel says, no, we expect it. Get it right the first time, and then we'll look at it. And then if we can make it, we'll find a way to make it better no matter what.
Right. So the question is either this money that's set aside will save the film or it will improve the film. But regardless, we're going to see a more Marvel, more polished product as a result of setting this aside.
You know, and Pixar. So Pixar has their approach where they talk about plussing. So Pixar takes this, they take a story and they, you know, the cheapest thing you can do is just put words on paper. That is the cheapest way to start a story. And then before they ever start cranking the computers away to start animating stuff, they've tested that story over and over and over again until they think, yes, we have it. Then they start to make it, and then they keep going back and going, what could be better? What do we need to improve? And that's it's a long, long process, but it's why most Pixar movies, you know, stand the test of time. They're great. They've been attacked from every point of view. How do you make it better? How do you plus it? And so, you know, your goal as a writer is, and my goal is like, okay, let me tell the story. Let me create the character. Now let me go back, and my first draft is going to be, what are all the little threads that I need to tie up? You know, it's not just how to, and the first draft isn't just like, I don't consider it just, oh, it's the version I haven't edited. It's, there's a lot of little things. And later on in the book, I'm like, oh, you know what? It'd be interesting if I pointed this out about a character here, or I have an unnamed person that does something here that's not a major character, but I can put them back here and assign something to them. Or, okay, this is much more clear. So there are all these little things that you should think about. So.
Yeah, man. Doggone it. I'm actually looking at the time. I think we're about to start dinner. We could do a couple more minutes, I guess.
Massage and barbecue. Any questions we have in the chat room? Anybody want to know?
That's a good one. By the way, Spearmint Nitrate points out that there were like 30 animatics for Toy Story. I actually had a whole bunch of health and diet stuff I wanted to chat with you about, but I'm afraid that it opened up more time.
Is that a hint? What?
No. For me, because like I did really well for January, mid January through mid February, and then I went out on the road, and then South by Southwest happened, and I basically just undid all of the good work I had done. So I'm back to having, you know, that bounce is completed, and so now I'm starting like just to shake things up, like just a 2 week highly restricted diet, and you know, whatever exercise I can manage. Like I'm basically factoring in now that I'm going to be too tired to even try to run. Like I'm going to say, I'm going to write, if I walk for an hour, that'll count. But the reason I was thinking about it is, I don't know if you've ever listened to Penn Sunday School, but he's been talking about his weight loss and the work of Ray Cronies, the basically chill your body to burn more calories thing, where you know, wear a vest made of ice and so on. Mm-hmm. Have you read anything about that? Do you know anything about that?
Yeah, I've read some stuff about like even like what the difference is of drinking really cold water and yeah, sure. In the long run, it's stupid. You know, I mean, and being the point of view that, is this something you're going to do?
Is this a lifestyle that you're going to do for the rest of your life or whatever?
And like the biggest changes that I made that stuck, the thing, and you've read more about like, you know, how habits form and stick and all that. You finished that book. I kept
Yes.
The biggest changes in my life were, one was switching to diet soda from regular soda, and we can make an argument that should get off of soda entirely. But
again, there's the perfect, and then there's the good, right?
Yeah, and then you're like, oh, but you still can, you know, there it still has calories. I'm like, yes, but it's less. It is less than regular soda. I watched myself drop like 8 pounds when I made that switch. When I switched, and this is, you know, granted, I was, you know.
And by the way, how quickly do you adjust to, if not liking, then, you know, possibly preferring the one? Like, I'm at the point now where it's like, I dislike the feeling on my teeth of sugared sodas at all.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm same way. Like, yeah, my dad would always drink Diet Coke, and I'd be like, how can you drink this? It's battery acid. And then when I realized, like, man, I looked at how many Cokes I consumed a day, I'm like, wow, that's 500 calories right there that I don't need. And so what I did was, it really happened at Outback Steakhouse. I just order a Diet Coke with my meal, and I would only drink it when I had food. And so I was not just paying attention to it, you know? And so that was a big change for me. Like, I noticed that, like, it was just an easy 5 pounds gone just, you know, in a few weeks of just doing that. Then to lower my soda intake, I don't have soda in my house. Oh, every now and then I might bring a bottle home with, like, I mean, the dark side of how Andrew finished his book was, Andrew has an addiction, and Andrew sometimes, to get himself to sit down at the keyboard, has to like take a very, he puts a bag of Skittles there
to lure himself.
Andrew may have consumed 1,000 calories of Skittles Friday night.
Wow.
But anyhow, I you know, thing to cut down my soda consumption is I stopped keeping soda in the house. So now I have, I'll go out to eat, I'll drink soda, I'll drink that. Now I'm trying to, like, I don't drink it like after like 9 o'clock or whatever. So that was a big thing. But I'll drink like a lot of Diet Coke when I go out to eat, which is not good. But now the next step is, I have a big glass of water. When I take my soda cup and I go to the fountain, I fill it with water before I drink my soda, which lowers the soda. Because you don't want to be drinking soda when you're thirsty,
mm-hmm.
You know, because you want to be drinking water. So anyhow, that was step. So biggest factor that affected me, switching away from sugary drinks to diet beverages,
mm-hmm.
Big, huge effect. I was finding myself in the middle of the day extremely lethargic, very, very lethargic.
Wait, and I'm sorry, say that again?
Lethargic.
No. Wait, in what situation are you lethargic?
Middle of the day. Just middle of the day. And be like, maybe I need a nap. And I'd be like, yeah, I've been sitting around all day. Yeah, it was really hard day. That's time for a nap. And what I started to do was, I would get up and I'd go to the park and I would walk for an hour or two hours. And I got into the habit of every day going for a long walk. It did wonders, one, for my health. It was another 5 or 6 pounds was easier to keep off doing that. Was boom. That solved that problem. Creatively, my most creative work has happened when I'm out there just walking and thinking, and that was a wonderful thing. That was the thing that I still do to this day. I try to walk at least 3 miles a day, every day. Like that is my average for, so like, looking at my average has been, yearly average has been that. After like Thanksgiving or something like that, I've done 10 miles a day or whatever. And I love it when I find a really good audiobook because then I don't pay attention to the time.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, actually, my daily average for the year is 3.5 miles a day.
I think this week's, maybe it's last week's, Freakonomics episode is where they talk about bundling, satisfying things with things that you know you ought to do. And they interviewed people where they used audiobooks as the way to lure people to the gym. They took students, they're like, here's your audiobook that you're listening to. You can only listen to it while you're at the gym. And then they tracked how often they showed up. And in some cases, they made it to where they couldn't physically listen to the book unless they showed up. Other times, they gave them the iPod and said, just try to only do it when you do the one thing. And it's fascinating stuff.
Dude, you look at the total running time of how Star Wars conquered the universe.
All of that was spent walking.
All that was spent walking.
Yeah.
And so I'm a big believer in that. So I would say diet. The diet drinks was a big help. Walking was a big help. But another big thing for me was like I have a sweet tooth and I have that. A big change up for me health wise is I hate vegetables. I'm not a fan of vegetables. But like I go to there's a place called Daphne's California Greek. I ate there like every day and like I get like a double helping of their vegetables. They're really good. And so I don't tell myself I can't have this or I can't have that. I don't get into that. Oh, I'm dieting. I can't do this. I just, there's much better word choice of I don't do this is much better than saying I can't. But then I say, okay, I like Panda Express. So what do I do when I go to Panda Express? I don't get the rice. I don't get the noodle. I get a big, huge heaping helping of vegetables. I still hate broccoli. I still hate them. I force myself to eat it all. And then I dig into my orange chicken or whatever. And it makes what for many people is a 2000 calorie meal into a 700 calorie meal for me.
Yeah. Yeah. No, absolutely. Well, so anyway, I'm starting a 2-week kind of reboot to see. I want to see how drastic, I mean, almost to fasting levels. I want to see if it's possible to clock in at under 1,000 calories and still work out.
I think it's an interesting experiment, but like, I know I can go from where I am to my optimum, like the best ever I've been in like 5 weeks. I know that if I want to go like in muscularity, whatever, I know in 2 weeks I can lose. I could probably lose 10, 15 pounds without looking like I was surviving radiation. But I'm just the problem with those sort of things, they don't solve the long-term problem for me.
No, it wouldn't be the sustainable thing is to, have the habit of exercise is now built in. It's what I need to do is, partly because I got a gig in 2.5 weeks, but it would be pretty rad if I was 3 to 4, 5 pounds lighter for. And then
that's easy. You can do that. That's no problem.
Yeah. I mean that, but the biggest thing is I need to, cause my biggest problem is I have a really hard time falling asleep. So I tend to drink beer late in the evening. And then, in order to get tired enough, if especially if we're doing like Night Attack or whatever, and it's like, a beer an hour for 5, 6, 7 hours straight adds up to a lot of beer. And just that sort of natural unwinding flow has to be broken. I talked to Bonnie. I'm like, look, for the next 2 weeks, it's going to be no booze, around 1,000 calories a day. And now understand a side effect of that will be there will be some night that I'll lay in bed. I'll go to bed at midnight and I will not fall asleep until 4 a.m. And
how much do you pay attention to your sleep hygiene?
A lot. I mean, part of the problem is it's inherently difficult to do the things that we know are associated with sleep. Cause what matters is you should have regularity, which is difficult when, 2 nights a week I've got, live streaming things. And occasionally there's an on the road show where, it's like, and when you come off of a performance at 10:30 and you pack everything up and now it's 11:30, you finally make it back to the hotel or you finally shut everything down. You can't just be like, and now let's go to sleep. So it's like, it's inherently variable.
You know about the whole no electronic screens and all that stuff.
Yeah. That's the biggest thing is I think what I'm going to do over the next 2 weeks, again, as part of the whole lifestyle snap around thing is it's been years since I've made a habit of reading before I go to bed, an actual book. So I'm going to sit and start reading a book because what I have been doing is always audiobooks. But at any rate, so yeah, that'll be I'm going to try good sleep hygiene and figure out if I can kind of break that reliance on having beers to get me tired to go to bed.
Sounds like a good plan, Brian.
Yeah, for a whole bunch of reasons.
Brian, I see a book in the writing.
how I stopped drinking beer and everything was awesome. Yeah,
not so many beers to go to sleep.
Yeah. It's if anyone hasn't had insomnia, man, it is brutal. I mean, I am very aware that is not a healthy lifestyle choice, but if it cuts 5 years off my life, but I spend more of it sleeping well, then that's fine. It's like, it's sitting there, especially when you get your head caught in space, like laying in bed, especially when it seems to strike when it's most important for you to get good sleep. Like, I got to get up. I got to sleep. And you can't. And you're just caught in that loop. It's miserable.
If it's not the caffeine that keeps me up, it's the stress about, like, oh, if I got everything figured out, you know, and like, my reassuring thing, my safe place is I get up and I go look at a spreadsheet.
Oh, really? Like to let you know that everything's
map
all right?
Out, you know, projects, income, all that sort of stuff. I'm like, okay, I know this is working on. I know this is, I'm doing this. And like, yeah, now I know I'm worried that, you know, what's going to happen in March of 2016. You know, I need to be worried about, you know, what projects are going on there. But sitting down, going to look at my spreadsheet and going, okay, this is here. I need to be sleeping right now, you know, and that's the thing I often do, is because you get that panic at night because you're like, oh my God, you know, you're worried about
everything. Well, and that's part of the reason that I want to do this, you know, kind of really intensely for the next 2 weeks, is because there's nothing that's hypercritical. Like if I do have one of those nights where I can't fall asleep until 4 a.m., I could put a note on the door and Bonnie will know to do her best to let me sleep in until, you know, 10 or whatever to get that sleep.
Yeah.
No, so I don't know. We'll see. We'll see how it goes. I'll report in next week.
Yeah, I didn't go to bed till 6 this morning.
God, so jealous. Kids change all
that. No, not that. I just was just that. Finished the book, and then I don't know. Maybe somebody had themselves a big piece of red velvet cake and a chocolate chip cookie. You know.
You and I have very different vices.
Yeah, I know. Igloo, you know, that's an interesting theory on how you go to sleep. And I always thought, like, man, you know, you know, I want to see the clinical research on that.
Right on. All right. Well, hey, speaking of food, I believe there's some waiting for me downstairs.
All right. Goodbye, y'all.
The Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.